Get ready.
Hello, welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is a show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guests. It is episode 168 of the Weekly Cooldown. It is September 30th is what date this is, unless you're in the chat, in which case it is September 29th. We are again live, and we are also again speaking with people about Latinx representation in video games, as well as in other things. This is Hispanic Heritage Month in the United States, so Hispanic Heritage Month, Latinx Heritage Month, Latina, Latino, Latine Heritage Month, whatever you call it, this is the month until October 15th. So we've spoken with two Latino and Latina friends, and I have yet another one. Can you believe it? I've reached deep into my friend pockets for this one. No, I'm kidding. We are going to actually allow her to kind of introduce herself.
Oh my God. Hi, I'm Risa. Thank you so much for having me ahead of me having any content to promote or speak
of. We will get to that in a minute.
I will speak a little bit about it, though. Like, I do hope in the future to bring out content based on my adventures in Japan, since I am based in Japan now, as well as anime and gaming as a lifestyle. I love to decorate and plan dates centered around whatever media I'm consuming at the moment. So I want to be able to share ways that I take my passions and incorporate them to make life a little more fun. I love romanticizing my life, so... Hopefully that will be of interest to people.
That's so cute. Okay. So you have said a few things that I think people would want to hear about. So specifically that you are based in Japan now. So where did you, I guess, migrate from in the United States, and how did you find yourself in Japan?
Oh my goodness. I have been all over the place in the United States. I'm originally from Texas, Houston based. And I lived in Florida. I used to work for Disney.
Oh, wow.
That was a really fun job.
Oh, was it? Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, well, I worked in an internship, so I had it probably a little bit better than some other employees. Because I was working in Animal Kingdom, and my job was to basically talk about scientific facts about animals and dinosaurs, and it was really cool.
All right.
And then after that,
I was going to say, are you an Imagineer? Were you an Imagineer?
I wish. We did actually try to enter the competition, but you have to have an engineering degree or an art degree, and I was a science degree. No, but after that, we finished college and then moved to Kansas because military. And then military brought us to Japan. But then we got out of the military, and now we're civilian living in Japan.
Okay. And how long have you been in Japan now?
About 3 years.
Wow. Okay. So you're into it. You're deep.
Kind of. I still feel like I've barely scratched the surface of being in Japan. But yeah, I feel comfortable. I feel confident whenever people come to visit me and I show them around places.
Now, because you said you don't really have your content creation up and running just yet, I do want to give the listener a little bit of context about how we know each other, because I think it's important and also it's cool. We play Princes of the Apocalypse together.
Yeah.
And I play, as if you follow me on Twitter, you know I play Crash, the habitual lying half-orc. So tell us about your TTRPG character.
I play your best friend, Polly.
Yes, bestie Polly.
Polly the Paladin. She is an innocent little flower child who just wants to protect her friends. And also really wants to jump into a magic river and become magical or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Polly's precious. Absolutely precious. I wish we were recording that one too, but we're just recording the Shroud sessions. But people would love Polly. I feel it in my bones.
Thank you.
I feel it in my bones. So let's see. Did we go into detail about what you want to create someday? Your content?
Well, like I said, I travel a lot around Japan. It's kind of a passion of mine and my husband's to see as many places around Japan as possible. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to record that and show people so they can experience it too. Maybe even use it when they're planning their future trips into Japan since it finally opened. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to, like I said, focus on some of my lifestyle aspects. Like, I really love decorating my house. I'm in the process of redecorating it as much as I can since it's a rental, getting mm-hmm. wallpapers and just trying to make it feel kind of matching whatever aesthetic I'm into at the moment. And I also like designing dates, planning out meals or foods centered mm-hmm. around, like, if I'm gonna watch a let's play of a certain game, or if I'm going to watch my husband play a game, sometimes I'll theme our meals around that so we can just kind of be really into it. So I kind of want to share like little tips and tricks for how to incorporate some of those things just to enjoy things a little bit extra.
Sure. Very cool. Now, I understand in your travels in Japan that you have picked up playing a particular instrument.
Yes, the shamisen. My husband surprised me with shamisen lessons for my birthday last year.
Mm.
And I've always wanted to play shamisen, but I never thought that I would get to actually play it. And my teacher is really, really cool. Her name is Yasunobu. That's her shamisen player's name. She has a different name as a hanayagi dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she teaches shinaibushi style. So when a lot of people hear shamisen, hear of it, they think of suguru mostly. Suguru is what the Yoshida brothers play. Suguru mm-hmm. is what Zenitsu plays in Demon Slayer mm-hmm. in that one episode. It's very kind of rock heavy, I would say.
Sure.
You're shredding on your shamisen. I don't play that style. I would like to one day, but it requires a lot of stamina. Mm-hmm. But my style is more like the wandering bard style. They would play it in the 1500s Edo period, just wandering down the streets, advertising their skills, and then be invited into the geisha quarters or whatever to finish performing. And so it's more of like a storytelling type of style, and it's more melodic than suguru. Mm-hmm.
Now, you said your teacher goes by two different names. For people who are unaware, those are stage names for both shamisen and a particular type of dancing, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you have not picked up the dancing yet?
No. I am not that coordinated.
Have you picked out a name? Do you get to do that yet?
After about maybe 5 years, or depending how skilled I am, maybe it might take me 6 or 7 years, I don't know. Mm. But I will get to pick out a name, and I think I might have my sensei help me.
Very good.
Because I'm not sure if it's appropriate or not appropriate for a student that isn't like in the line of succession to borrow a character from their teacher's name.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that that's okay. I might borrow a character from her name, or I might just come up with something on my own. You can just do that too. Come up with your own name. I haven't quite thought of, but I have like one idea, like maybe Subameko.
Okay. Oh, wait. Don't tell us too much. I want it to be a surprise.
It's going to be a long wait.
I want to wait the whole, it hasn't quite been a year yet. So when I'm 35, I will be back with you, and we will discuss what you've picked for your name.
Oh my god.
And we'll all love it. We will all love it. That being said, do you still want to do a couple strums for us?
Yeah, yeah. Let me make sure my shamisen is in tune. Mm-hmm. Get in a few practice notes so I don't screw up. Mm-hmm. Bear in mind, I've really only had 15 lessons.
Okay,
I take lessons pretty sporadically, but I want to improve that. So,
let's call this your 16th practice.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Right.
Good. We love it. We absolutely love it. That was great. Thank you. Thank you so much for being willing to play for us. That's a performance, right? You just performed. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, my first real performance, guys.
It's beautiful.
Eventually, I will incorporate Anka singing. She's also teaching me Anka as well.
Mm. And is that just a part of it, or is it like a separate... Like, is it shamisen dancing and singing, or is it shamisen and singing and then dancing?
So with her, she is primarily just a shamisen teacher. She wasn't going to teach me singing, but I asked her if I could learn because she also sings. She is a huge performer. Outside of giving shamisen lessons, when she's not doing shamisen performances herself, she's also a voice actor. The stage actor, and she's been in musicals. So I asked her, like, could your teaching lessons also extend to teaching me Anka style? Because I've always really loved Anka.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, let's hear you. And so I did a few notes for her, and she was like, we can work with this. And so... So I'm learning it. That too, but it's hard for me to sing while I'm playing. The muscle memory is not quite there. It was different when I played piano.
Mm-hmm.
I could sing while I did piano, but I can't while I'm playing shamisen.
It is a different kind of a beast, it sounds like. But
yeah, because there's no frets on a shamisen. You just kind of have to memorize where your fingers are positioned. And just hope for the best.
It reminds me of playing the flute. I used to play the flute in high school. Really? And I was actually very good at playing the flute. Like, I was learning pretty well, and I was going along with the lessons, but I just was like, I don't know if I can keep up with this. My brain doesn't really, like, my hand-eye coordination is not what I think it's going to be or was.
That's the problem I have when playing shamisen is, like, I'm so clumsy.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
And that playing an instrument is like an exercise in holding in all of those clumsy habits and denying your true clumsy self.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And just moving a part of yourself into a corner and saying, shut up.
Yep.
You got to stop for now. but that's great. I'm glad you are learning. I hope to hear more from you in that regard. But we're here to talk about Latina-ness. So there's a couple of questions we have, and some of them explore being Latina in Japan, what being Latina means, etc., etc. So without further ado, let's start specifically with our first question that we've asked every guest. What does it mean to be Latina or Latine to you? What does it mean to be a gamer? What does it mean to combine those identities? And does it mean anything at all?
Oh, those are some heavy questions. How do you get away with this? So being Latina is something that I think a lot of people, especially growing up in a different country like America, not in like your home country, so to speak, mm-hmm. you kind of evolve with it. You start off, you know, being proud, I think, or at least for me, I was really proud to be different because I grew up in a white neighborhood, a white affluent neighborhood. We weren't the affluent ones. We had like the tiny little house among all the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents didn't want me speaking Spanish growing up.
Oh.
They were worried that I would have an accent and that would get me ostracized, or they were worried that I would have difficulty speaking and end up in an ESL class. And there's nothing wrong with ESL.
Yeah.
They do get treated different, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So for a while, being Latina just meant fitting in. And that was a struggle that I dealt with a lot. And oddly enough, I deal with it here, but I feel like it's a different type of struggle because it's more of a cultural struggle
mm-hmm.
fitting into Japan. And all that, that's a whole nother thing I'll talk about later. But being Latina, like, yeah, it was, you deal with a lot of generational trauma, which is a big theme in like Disney movies about people of color, isn't it? The generational trauma, but it's real. I remember my abuela, she wouldn't go to school with me on Grandparents' Day because all the other grandparents worked at NASA, and she was just a lady that did laundry for people. She had a sixth grade education, and she didn't speak English very well, and she only had a green card. She was too embarrassed to go and take whatever test she needed to take to become an actual citizen, so she never got her citizenship. And all of these things, even though she was proud of her kids and what they were able to accomplish, she was still embarrassed. And that kind of like rubbed off on me a little bit, I think.
Yeah, it seems like there's kind of a generational, if you don't mind me saying, like a passage of that kind of trauma, right? It went from your grandparents or your abuela to your mother and father, and you know, passing that off to you, making sure that you're not accented, right? And making sure that you're in English-speaking classes. And then, I guess, now on to you. And I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know, though, after a while, I started finding pride in it. And Latina now is like remembering how to be strong by remembering those people who pushed themselves so that the next generation would have it better than them. Like my grandmother only went to sixth grade, but my mom was able to finish high school and even a little bit of college. And then my mom and dad, they worked really hard, backbreaking labor jobs. My mom worked at a post office in the sorting room where she's on her feet all the time. She had to take graveyard shifts. My dad worked at a chemical plant. But they were able to put me and my sisters all through college, and even my husband too. They helped when he was struggling with college by providing us, you know, a place to stay when we needed it.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has his master's in epidemiology, and I'm just so proud of like where we've all come from. My husband too, his mom is an immigrant from China, from Hong Kong specifically. And yeah, he's a first generation American, and he has his master's degree, and his mom is just so proud.
That's great. I do appreciate hearing the kind of here we are now story, especially that you found strength in what is to most others perhaps seen as like a struggle or a weakness. And I like that you're able to share that.
Yeah. As now, for being a gamer.
Yes. Tell us.
I think it's so interesting that term, because like being a gamer can either be a career, it can be a serious hobby, or it could be just a hobby just for fun. And it's so interesting how it's come a long way since games were just a toy. They were in the toy section in a lot of stores, right? But now they're this serious medium that's kind of transcended just being a toy. And so the people who fit in as being a gamer, they've also fit into a lot of different categories. But me being a gamer is just passion and finding ways to connect with others through that passion. It's part of technology, and I always thought the best part of technology is how it keeps finding ways to connect people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then combining those.
Yeah.
That's tough. I think just being a Latina gamer just means accepting that most media out there is not going to feature a whole lot of protagonists that look like you or connect to you on that level. Mm-hmm. But I can still enjoy games. I enjoy it more when developers surprise us with exploring those subjects in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think America in particular is still finding its footing in terms of developers starting to put our diversity and culture, diversity of culture and skin tones out there. Other studios from other countries too. So right now it's a lot of waiting to see, but I guess for me it just means being patient, not jaded.
Yeah. It is, it's something we spoke about actually in the last episode, where, you know, we have some Latino and Latina protagonists, but they feel like someone watched a certain kind of television show for the most part. Yeah.
Or like and they only had one experience with
yes, Latinas. Right. And so it feels kind of forced. It feels kind of stereotypical. But, you know, you make a point where we are still making kind of progress, right? We're finding our footing. It's wobbly right now, but mm-hmm. hopefully we can stand tall at some point. Very cool. Now, let's shift focus to kind of more cultural questions. So we spoke a lot about how much you're enjoying the culture in Japan. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about any kind of good experiences you've had being Latina in Japan?
Oh, yeah. I think for the most part, people are very friendly and very very helpful. You know, anytime I'm at a bus stop and I'm trying to make sense of the bus routes, there's always somebody who speaks English who will walk up to me and be like, "Excuse me, do you need any help?" And I just think that's so nice. Now, I will say that, like, just because my experiences have been positive, that doesn't mean there are negatives. Other people have said that there are negative experiences, but I do kind of take them with a grain of salt, because a lot of the times when I'll hear something, it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have been in that area to begin with. Like, for instance, Kabukicho. Kabukicho is like the red light district.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of scammers there who will target foreigners. So sure. I'm like, well, what are you doing in Kabukicho? Or there'll be people who say they got denied access to a restaurant because they're foreigners, but it's a host club. And most of the time when they're denying access to foreigners in host clubs, it's because of a cultural difference. Some
sure.
people have been a little bit too handsy. There's a distinct culture that the Japanese understand that a lot of foreigners don't. So I can kind of understand that. But
right.
One thing that I think is interesting when I came here and was beginning to settle in was unlearning a lot of the trauma of being a person of color in America. Because, for instance, like, I would get on a train and I would find my seat, and then somebody would get up after you sit down.
Yeah.
And I would think to myself, like, oh, no, this is the Gaijin gap I've been hearing about. Where people will just get up because you're a gaijin. But then I realized, like, no, because we would have the next stop and that person would leave, and I realized they weren't getting up because I'm gaijin. They were getting up because it was their stop next.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like you realize, like, wow, I have some really bad habits I need to cleanse so that I can just chill out and not be upset all the time.
Sure. Yeah, and that's... I don't want to say surprising, but it is a little interesting to hear that you had a gut reaction to a certain kind of behavior, not because of the kind of imposition of the Japanese culture or Japanese people, but because you are used to that kind of behavior in America. So unlearning that kind of issue, right? That kind of trauma even is almost scary to do in a foreign country, I would imagine.
Yeah, and of course you can't let your guard down completely. There will always be jerks and assholes, Can I say that on your podcast?
Oh, yes, of course. Okay. Sorry, please cuss. I would be insulted if you did not.
There will always be people like that wherever you go. I haven't run into it myself in Japan. I think the most offensive, if you can call it that, thing that's ever happened to me is going to a restaurant and automatically being handed an English menu. That doesn't offend me because, yes, please give me English. I don't want to learn any more kanji today. but for other people who have lived here longer, that can be, you know, kind of disheartening to be treated like an outsider when you're trying to just feel like this is your home. So I can understand that. But it's not really done maliciously, I think. They're just trying to be considerate in their own way.
Right. Yeah. I can see that. So, my next question to you is, while in Japan, have you found any kind of connections to your own culture, whether it be your home country where your grandmother is from, or Texas culture? Has anything pointed out to you, or does it feel recognizable at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is my favorite thing. One of my first words I learned in Japanese was the word for bread, because it's the same in Spanish.
Yes.
Portuguese. Because the Portuguese introduced bread to Japan in the 1500s.
That's too early.
Yeah, too early. I'm tired. But there's a treat here called melon pan, which is the same treat. It looks like the same treat my parents used to get at the local bakery called conchas or pan de dulce.
Yes.
And it's because they are the same. So my parents, when they came to visit, they were really excited to see that at the bakeries here, and they would get like tons of them to have with their morning coffee. And funnily enough, my husband also, who's, like I said, he's half Chinese through his mom. She would take him to the bakery in Chinatown, and they would get pineapple bread, which is the same thing as melon pan, which is the same thing as conchas. And I think that little connection all around is just so fun.
Food is the best connection, right?
It really is. Which is a shame that Japan does not have good Mexican food.
Yeah. Oh, I can only imagine, like, trying to find... Like, one of my favorite foods is like a good oxtail stew, specifically goat curry. I can imagine having a struggle.
I have not been able to find goat, just lamb. They have a lot of curry restaurants.
I can see lamb being a very popular one, but specifically goat curry, I need that. And if I can't find it, I'm making it myself.
when I was younger, my dad used to barbecue cabrito, which is goat. Mm-hmm. And it was my favorite thing. I'd request it all the time for my birthday. But other than that little connection, they do have festivals here for Latin Americans. Like, just recently they had Fiesta Mexicana.
Okay.
Which was really cool. They had traditional dancers, traditional singers. They spoke in Spanish. They had booths for handicrafts. And they even had luchadors.
Wow.
It was really, really cool. I was sad to have missed it. I've seen like people like post videos of it, and it looked really cool. Mm-hmm. And then coming up is the Salsa Festival. There is, from my understanding, a Latin American community here. It's small, and I think it's mostly Brazilian.
Okay.
There's a basic understanding of Latin American culture in Japan, but it's very surface level. Mm-hmm. Kind of like how it is in the States, though, with when it comes to other cultures. Like,
sure, yeah.
A funny thing that happened when my parents came here is my dad kept trying to order fried rice at every Japanese restaurant we went to.
Yeah.
And I had to tell him, they don't serve that here. And he's like, well, they do back in the States. And I'm like, okay... Well, the States caters the Japanese food and other Asian food to American taste, so every restaurant has fried rice, no matter what kind of Asian restaurant it is, because it's catering to, you know, American tastes. And same over here in Japan, the restaurants here cater to Japanese tastes. So when I had like beans in a Japanese Mexican restaurant, it tasted kind of like Japanese curry. It was weird, but also kind of good.
Yeah. I can see how that could be good. Yeah, the spices are not too dissimilar, with give or take like some turmeric and some cumin and stuff like that. But it sounds Very interesting. Very interesting. So let's see. Let's talk about, have you done much? I mean, like, how can I put it? I don't want to say, like, are you going out to the arcades or anything like that? But, like,
oh, yeah.
You know, how are you finding video games? Or are you kind of interacting with game culture while you are in Japan?
It's kind of hard not to in Japan. They love their games. You go to one of those conveyor belt sushi restaurants, like Kura Sushi, mm-hmm. which I think they have some of them in the States now. And yeah, when you finish your eating, you put the plates into like a little slot and a little game pops up and you can win a prize. It's really neat. And yeah, we've gone to arcades. We've gone to Joy Poly, which is an indoor theme park that also has games in it too. Really fun place. And then there was Tokyo Game Show. We were gonna go, but we got the dates for it wrong, so we missed it. But it was amazing from what I could tell. They had all of these really cool merchandise, like some Rareware stuff. And it's really hard to avoid gaming here, I think, in Japan. They like it's so incorporated into the culture, I think.
Yeah. Did you have any, like, I don't want to say misconceptions, but did you have any ideas about what gaming culture would be like and then you were wrong or surprised or anything like that?
Funny enough, because everybody would say, like, oh, don't treat Japan like an anime and it's not like your video games and stuff like that, I expected it to be less.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to come here and to see people, like, on the train and they're watching a Pokemon tournament or watching a lady play her Animal Crossing on her Switch while she's waiting for her doctor's appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at how big it actually is here. And even just going to the arcade, you'll sometimes see, like, gentlemen in business suits playing some, hitting the arcade on their lunch break.
Hmm.
Just to blow off some steam. And it's bigger here than I thought it would be. Don't let the people tell you can't treat it like an anime. It totally is.
Just a little bit, yeah. Okay, so that was actually very enlightening even for me, so I hope the listener also gets a little bit out of that. Now I want to turn outward toward the rest of the folks out there. So I want to know from you, who are some influential, friendly, or otherwise amazing figures in games that stick out in Latin American gaming circles? It could be streamers, it could be devs, it could be the video game characters themselves.
Well, I think influential at first for me, and this is probably a really silly one, is Viva Piñata. Like, that was my first introduction into, like, oh, hey, Mexican stuff can be cool in games.
Mm-hmm.
And then it made me, like, start thinking, like, you know, how cool would it be if, like, they had a Pokemon-style game with, like, Alebrijes and stuff like that?
Sure.
That would be so cool. But then after that, you know, Radio Silence, there's no games that have, like, any Latin American stuff. And then Papo y Yo came out. I don't know how many people know about that game, but it's from a Montreal-based company called Minority Media. And it's the characters are Brazilian, but that's irrelevant to the story. The story is really just about a father and son and working through the trauma of their relationship. But the fact that they were Brazilian, I thought, just kind of made the story neat. It was just like, okay, it's cool to see that it can be characters other than, you know, Caucasians.
Sure.
Having these problems. But moving forward from that, I think some influential developers in games are, I think, I haven't played this game myself, but my niece raves about it, is Chris Tales. Okay. That's from a Colombian studio called Dreams Uncorporated, and it's a JRPG.
Okay. Oh.
Or it's kind of like a JRPG. Because it's Colombian, so it's not really a JRPG. But, you know,
sure.
I think it's cool to think of, you know, Latin American studios developing RPGs and to see what they can do with that genre. And then I think probably the most influential is this Mexican studio called Lienzo, which mm-hmm. made a game called Mulaca, which focuses on indigenous culture in Mexico.
Mm.
And it's got a very beautiful art style, and they're working on a new game called Aztec Forgotten Gods.
Yes, I've heard about that one.
Yeah, and I just think that is so cool, and I love to see more indigenous culture represented in video games in a mm-hmm. respectful way. They actually hired an anthropologist and Tarahumara leaders to capture the essence of the culture in the game Mulaca. So I think there's just so much authenticity in the game and so much love and respect for the culture.
Yes. Very good. Check out Lienzo Studio, or as the developer, Lienzo Studios, yep, based in Mexico. Mm-hmm. L-I-E-N-Z-O. Check out Papoeyo, P-A-P-O-E-Yo. And yeah, check out Aztec Forgotten Gods. I was following the development of this game specifically with a friend of mine, George. Shout out to George, who was like extremely excited, right, to see not only the kind of mythological, anthropological features in Aztec Forgotten Gods, but also the like strange modernization of it as well, where mm-hmm. you're like fighting with cool technology, and the technology seems to be based off of myth and legend, and the art style is very unique to this game. It was just very fun to watch this game get developed, and then subsequently watch it get played. I mean, it was a fantastic game if I've ever seen it.
They have such a great vision behind their stuff, and like I said, a good love and appreciation for their subject material.
Yep. Very cool. For your final question, and then I promise I will let you go. What do we want the gaming community to know about Latino, Latina gamers, Latinx gamers? What can the community as a whole do better?
Well, I think a lot of Latinos would just appreciate the acknowledgement that there's so much to draw from when we have many and diverse cultures within our own community. Like mm-hmm. Mexican culture is different from Colombian. It's different from Brazilian. And then you have the indigenous cultures. So I think there's really so much there that you can draw from. Like I said, Viva Piñata really kicked it off first in my head that like, yeah, there's so much you can do, even with just like little aspects of the culture, to make a game that just really pops and stands out on its own. And I think in terms of what we could be doing better as a community is just to support more studios that are willing to explore those stories and find ways to put them out there. It can be difficult, you know, when you yourself lack the means to put those things that you want to see out there. So I think at best what we can do is to just be supportive as a community, really come together.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Easy. Asked and answered. All right. So, since we're moving along toward the end of the show, we always ask that you, the guest, give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Oh, I've got a good one. So, since it's getting close to spooky times, I'm going to recommend Grim Fandango. No, LucasArts is not a Latino company and Tim Schafer's not Latino, but I do appreciate the nods to the Aztec afterlife in the game, and that it's also told in a film noir style. I also appreciate that the game employed many Latino voice actors, including the Tony Plana, who helped shape the character and the dialogue. So I think it's a pretty great game. Also play Mulaca if you haven't. It doesn't have anything to do with October. I just think more people should play it. Those are going to be my recommendations.
Very good. As always, this is the part of the show where I'm the most unprepared, because I never know what I want to recommend people. But since we've been talking,
I was going to say, well, what do you recommend to get into the mood for October and fall?
Ooh, so for, okay, so for like spooky times, I will recommend, because I actually just spoke about it, literally any Resident Evil game.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Resident Evil 3 features a Latino man in it. Unfortunately, he is like suave and like so cool for school stereotype, but also he's like handsome and cute, and you get to play as him for a while, so it's great.
Balances out.
Yeah. Resident Evil 3, the remake, is really cool. Resident Evil 2, any of the Resident Evils, honestly, are honestly a lot of fun. Even if you don't really dig the horror genre, just jump in there. I will also recommend, since an entire server of folks have been playing it recently, Gundam Evolution. Since we've also been talking about Japanese culture, I think this kind of encapsulates part of Japanese culture for me. Gundam is big with everyone I have ever met in my life. They love Gundam. And Gundam Evolution, the kind of Overwatch Gundam shooter, is now out. And it's a lot of fun. It really is. I'm still trying to figure out, like, how to get the hang of it all. But if I can do it, you can do it. Just do it on keyboard and mouse. That's my only suggestion. Don't do it on a controller.
I think I've seen people playing that on their train trips, too.
We have been playing it in the Discord. Almost every night.
I'm going to have to look into it. It looked really, really cool.
It's a lot of fun. Check out...
one where you can play as, like, different Gundam characters?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. That is an amazing game.
It's like a big Gundam shooter, and it's fantastic.
Thank you for reminding me to check out that game. I remember pointing that out to my husband and saying I wanted to play.
Yeah. If you ever have time, play with us. We all play. All of us.
I just might.
We get real crazy, though, so you were warned. And finally, to finish off this episode, please let us know where you can be found on the internet, if you want to be found, and if you have anything else to plug.
I unfortunately don't have anything yet, but keep an eye on Sailor Otome's stuff. Shout out to my bestie. She will probably be helping me set up a lot. So if I do end up having something to promote, she'll be the first to probably promote it. So that, or I'll probably beg you to let me come back.
Yes.
So I can promote. So
anytime and every time. Perfect. Very good. All right. As always, you can find me at CommyJace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well at WK Cooldown on Twitter. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news, other episodes, and reviews. Be sure to leave your own review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Podchaser, whatever. Just do it. I want people to hear me in Japan. And the only way that works is if you review the podcast. I've read about the algorithm. That's the way it works. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. Remember that you can support your favorite charities and support this show at the same time. Our logo and art is done by Corrigan. Follow Corrigan on Twitter at DoghouseCorrigan, DoghouseCorrigan, DoghouseCorrigan on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. Follow Riki on Twitter at dog_noise, DOG_NOISE. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
And I'm tired.
And we'll see you next week. Go get some sleep. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.